broadcasting live. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and happy summer. So much of us that are teachers, we have made it to the finish line. And for all of you in the Blockhead Nation, thank you for stopping by. Once again, you are listening to your favorite Blockhead, the only podcast in the podcasting world that can somehow incorporate the Peanuts comic strip 1 minute and then be talking about MMA and Warriors Inside the Octagon the next. Guys, you know me. Those that have been listening to the show, I'm quite interested in historical documents and historical documentaries. I'm always interested in checking out other shows, and I'm proud to share with you my newest affiliate, my friends over at Curiosity Stream. From the founder of the Discovery Channel, the Curiosity Stream is the award-winning stream destination where viewers can journey through our world and beyond with over 2,400 documentaries to choose from and watch for just $2.99 a month. Or if you decide for their plan, you can get $19.99 a year after your 7-day free trial. Satisfy your thirst for knowledge anytime and anywhere with Curiosity Stream. Whether you want to use your electronic devices, your tablet, your phone, your TV, you can check out Curiosity Stream, access available worldwide on all of those devices, anytime, anywhere you want to check out a documentary. And guys, that is very befitting for the anniversary of D-Day. If you want to check out some documentaries on D-Day, you can find them easily through Curiosity Stream. So I'm super thrilled to have them as an affiliate. Shout out to my friends over at Curiosity Stream, and a thank you for those who support the show for your favorite Blockhead. Our scripture of the day is going to be coming from 2 Timothy chapter 2, verse 22. It says, "Flee the evil desires of youth and pursue righteousness, faith, love, and peace, along with those who call out on the Lord out of a pure heart." Guys, I was thinking about this one as I was listening to Brandon Heath today. He has a great song called Whole Heart, and there's a part where he says, "I was careful what I let you see. I only thought you wanted the best of me. Please know that when you approach the Lord, He wants your whole heart." And I would hope you would consider listening to that song. Please take 2 Timothy chapter 2, verse 22 to heart today. That's what I have to share with you starting out. So again, I come with a belated remembrance for D-Day, June 6, 1944. And we remember everything from Eisenhower's speech to the gentleman who was 97 years old that just did a final jump again on the beaches of Normandy. That was put up on my Facebook page. That was beautiful to see that he just said that it was felt good. This time was very different in his parachute, ascending onto where so much chaos was happening so long ago during the Second Great War. So guys, I give my remembrance, I give my thanks to all the heroes of the greatest generation, those who stormed the beaches of Normandy, those on the Allied forces. Again, it's a hard swallow for me when I think about how I know that my grandparents, along with maybe many of yours, your great-grandparents, pursued this to the end until we finally brought the troops home. So I give my heartfelt remembrance out for D-Day on this show. I would hope you consider maybe checking out a documentary on Curiosity Stream or just on your own if you happen to know of one that you're familiar with. Check out your local library. Check out some different stories that have been written about D-Day. That's always my encouragement. And also, really quick, if I've got a chance, there's a revelation I wanted to give. Now, my wife is not a fan of horror movies in any way, shape, or form. You may not be either. But there was something I stumbled upon. It was a theory on YouTube, and I just thought, well, I might need to share this with the Blockhead Nation because it seems like a well-founded theory. I think it might have been a film theory that was on YouTube. And this revelation is, all this time, here's what I've always appreciated about the Blair Witch Project, okay? I'm not going to say it's one of the greatest of all time. It's definitely one of the cheapest, not poorly made, but definitely the lowest budget in the history of horror movies. But if you look at it, you don't ever see the enemy. You don't see the witch. You just see what's happening to the kids out in the woods. But there's something about that that actually added up when I went back and looked at some of the theory that was on this episode. It's possible that there was no witch at all. It's possible that this was a well thought out, well plotted plan by the two boys to murder the girl. It's hard for me to debate that one. Now, granted, you do have the urban legends of that area. If you go back and watch the movie, but take a second to think about that. This is a huge revelation. I wouldn't be sharing it with you if I didn't somewhat digest it a little bit. So, was there no witch entirely in the Blair Witch Project? It's possible. Think about what happens. The boys lead her to the house. You hear Josh's voice. Why would he go upstairs if he's yelling from downstairs? Was that a decoy to be able to get... And again, it's all speculation. It's all a movie. Nonetheless, in his right mind, why would he be standing in the corner? Why would he just allow that to happen if he was in, you know, if he wasn't in compliance with the other boy? So again, it's hard to answer that, but again, I would say if you go back and watch it, I think it's Film Theory on YouTube. Go check that out. Blair Witch Project, How There Was No Murder. There was no murderer. You have a power struggle that's happening there between the two boys that happens the whole time, but it seems like it's well thought out, well acted by these filmmakers. So just a little something to chew on from your favorite blockhead. Now, I had a good conversation with my cartoonist, my pro bono cartoonist, I keep calling that, Delva78, and he and I had a great conversation just about targeting someone because you have an interest in collectibles or anything that's nostalgic, some type of paraphernalia. And in a way, he was saying, is that how that is toxic when somebody who has an ownership of something that somebody that of the common man could not have? In other words, let's take for instance, there's a company in San Francisco called Super 7. They sell remakes of He-Man and the Masters of the Universe. A brand new Castle Grayskull could set you back easily $300. Not making this up. The Snake Mountain that's coming out is easily somewhere between $300 and $600. Now, what they're selling to is not necessarily kids. They're selling to 35-year-old males or somebody of our demographic who I'm talking to right here on this show. They're selling nostalgia, a chance to have your childhood back. That's a pretty heavy price tag to put out there. So the common man is only able to window shop at Super 7. Meanwhile, somebody who has deep pockets could easily go and purchase something like this. And in a way, he's mentioning that they use that as they are maybe superior to another fan. So I asked him, in a way, is that toxicity? Or is that more like a power grab by individuals in a society who have a low self-esteem? I have more money than you, therefore I can buy something you can't purchase, and therefore I have some control and power over you. And he told me he thinks that that's the latter that leads to the former in a lot of ways. It's a well-weaved evil structure here that sounds a lot like what we were trying to mention with the scripture that happened earlier about flee the evil desires of youth and pursue righteousness, faith, love, and peace, along with allowing the Lord to examine your heart. So, as I share that, this entire idea of power struggles continued to fill up my notes as I was continuing to put together this podcast. And one power struggle that came to mind for me, most people recognize Kevin Bacon for his work in Footloose, maybe for his work in Apollo 13. He had a small part in JFK. But there's one lost movie in the 80s, not necessarily lost, but this is a less known, more appreciated by the underground fans than it is the normal populace. The movie is called Whitewater Summer. If ever you wanted to see a show that is not about outdoor exploration amongst young boys, if you wanted to see the entire theme of the movie as power struggle, then this is the movie you need to see. You've got a traditional mountain climber that believes it's one way or the highway, which is his way. And then there's Alan, who is the black sheep, that shows other ways to do something smarter, not harder. In other words, how to catch fish. He makes an entire chute where they can swim in and he can just drop the trap and he can grab a lot more fish than the common practices of using a spear for one fish, which, by the way, we know that light refracts, how it's going to bend the light, so it's a little bit harder to catch your one fish. Here he comes back with a 10 count of fish, and Vic goes, "You didn't do it the right way." His answer is not your way. No, the right way. So to punish him, he makes him clean and gut the fish. And he says, I'll come back here when you've finished them. You're going to stay here until this is done, then I'll come get you. Which ends up, Alan ends up throwing them out. And he stays all night on this little island as the other guys stay by the fire. And nobody goes, and again, it's a power struggle. Could Vic have swallowed his pride and gone and go and picked him up to have dinner? Yes. Could Alan have succumbed to his ways and just cleaned the fish and said, I'm done so I can come back and eat? Yeah, but neither man was willing to back down. All through the entire movie. So if you ever needed to see an example of power struggles, I would strongly suggest checking out the less known movie called Whitewater Summer. Not to mention it fits the summer personality nonetheless. Those that are enjoying their downtime, wouldn't hurt to watch that. So as I look through this also, there's another video. Been spending a lot of time on YouTube lately. Been doing that quite often throughout most of the years I've been doing podcasting, but really been trying to embrace another. This is all free plugs. And MMA on Point is on YouTube. If you ever haven't checked it out, MMA on Point does a really good job of explaining what's going on in current day MMA. And as I have to talk about this one, he asked the important question, is the age of trash talk over? Because now Connor is out of the picture. These other guys who are trying to follow trash talk, one is straight up cringeworthy. I'll be saving that for one particular individual in just a minute. But people like Colby Covington have this own little way of trash talk that does rubs people the wrong way. It doesn't get you a fan following. Yeah, I got him a chance to go to Washington, D.C. because he wore Donald Trump's hat. I think he wore that on You're Welcome with Chael Sonnen, Make America Great Again. He tried one with the slogan, Make Fighting Great Again, which didn't stick around very long. And all these other guys, it just seems like... I talked about this on Mike and Toria's show about how, really, this is a good time to be watching MMA if you're not interested in the trash talk. Sometimes you're just on one side or the other. In my way, I do straddle the fence when I say it's important to use your words and use them correctly. But really, this is the time where we've got some serious talent in MMA that is really fun to watch. So he asks about, is the age of trash talk over? It's not over, but they've swapped places. The fighting and the kicking have actually become the main focal point of it, where the trash talk is more of an undercurrent. During Connor's era, that's exactly what was going on. The exact opposite was the words can get you. And you want proof of that? They had to cut out the fans and only have the press come in for the press conference for Connor and Khabib. No fans were allowed to come in to listen to the press conference. That should tell you something. Floyd Mayweather and Connor had a press conference in the middle of the week during the work week, and they sold out that arena. I think several of them, actually, that they had and met up for. So the time has come where the tide is shifting. I would sincerely suggest that you listen to MMA on Point, is the age of trash talk over? Because really, it's like age of trash talk is starting to lose its once iron grip, and it's going back to what fans have been wanting, that true diehard fans are wanting all along, which is the fights and the intensity of the fights that come with that. And speaking of other things, guys, you know that I have talked about the blade tap many times before. This blade tap is cutting your shaving time in half, saving money, no wasted water. It's the 3-in-1 razor unclogger, sharpener, and holder, and it sharpens your blades for a smooth and close shave every time. The brush is slightly frayed out or designed to get in between the blades of your razor. The clamp-style holder has two grooves that hold the razor in place during storage or travel, and the honing pad is designed specifically to polish and sharpen the microscopic nicks on the blade as you press and slide firmly before setting the razor in the holder to go start your day. So as you click on the link today for the podcast to purchase your blade tap, when you get to checkout, in order to get 20% off your purchase, make sure you use the promo code TAPITCLEAN. All uppercase, one word, TAPITCLEAN. TAPITCLEAN, one word, 20% off of your blade tap as a thank you from your favorite blockhead. And I appreciate you supporting the show and supporting my friends with the blade tap. Now, as we go forward, I almost wanted to call this a Stockholm Syndrome, but it's not quite the same thing. It's just a little bit depressing to see Jimmy Manoa and Alexander Gustafsson both decide while they're in the cage at Stockholm for UFC to say, I'm ready to hang up my gloves. I'm ready to retire. We find out post-fight that Manawa has decided that this is going to be the last fight he does. Of course, Gus has that moment where he, very disappointingly, this isn't even like a moment of glory for him. This isn't almost like a shooting star that's lost its glimmer. This is just a moment of him saying, show's over, guys, and he throws his gloves down in the middle of the octagon. Really hard for me to see that. It makes me wonder the same thing. Is Gus dealing with an injury? Is he dealing with the mentality of a fighter who just believes they don't have it anymore when he's got plenty to offer? After going the first three rounds he did with Gus, and then to do very well against Anthony Smith until the fourth round, caught by a submission, Gus was winning the fight. So I believe he has more to give. Maybe he needs just that reprieve. He does need some time off to reassess, get back with his training camp, and we can go from there. But to see both of these killers consider in Stockholm that they are going to call it a day in MMA. I guess I was hoping for more of a trilogy. I was hoping for more storytelling in the cage with both of these guys. Because I don't look to them to when it gets to going to the mic. I look to them for their skill and their craftsmanship. And when I talk about skill and craft, sometimes there is one little moving part, one element that I leave out of MMA that I need to talk about a little bit more and give appreciation to, because most people just won't take the time to do it. It's the referees. There are referees in MMA that have no business being in there, but there are some that just hold down the fort, and they hold it down well. Obviously, we have to give a big shout out to the number one referee of MMA of all time, Big John McCarthy, who wrote the rule book that many will follow in his footsteps. But right now, if I had to pick one for UFC, most would tell you the same guy. They'd tell you it's Herb Dean. That's who I'd stick with for UFC, obviously. But there's a guy in Bellator that needs more appreciation than he's getting. Mike Beltran. If you're not sure who he is just by mentioning the name, let me just say the words handlebar mustache. This guy has a well-toned, well-put-together mustache that anybody could either emulate or could be agitated thinking, why can't I grow something like that? But by looking at him, you would think sometimes you can have that bias of, what does this guy know about mixed martial arts? Let me remind you how much he knows. The guy came from Strikeforce. He had a time in the UFC, and now he's currently in Bellator. He has had to call some hard shots. Back in 2014, he had to make a guy either fight or call it off for the night. And there was every person who was in the sport gave him nothing but praise for his decision. Recently, we have Jake Hager versus TJ Jones, who decides he gets a little too offended by the exchange that they have in the press conference, to where he's going to hold the submission just a little bit too long. Okay, that's as scumbag of a move as you can make in MMA. Whether it's the leg, the arm, or the neck, you let go, or it's the ankle. You let go when the tap goes. He decides he holds it a little bit longer. You can see Mike Beltran trying to move his arm, then having to dig in and go, let go. And of course, he screams at him in the cage, and there's nobody that is getting upset with Mike Beltran. Because again, the guy has a well-known track record, has done extremely well in MMA, and sometimes it's just that bias that people have. Well, what does he know about, just by first glance, people judge you from the first time they see you, what does he know about MMA? Well, often, if you go to a workplace, the guy who is dressed the most lax amongst everybody else that's wearing the monkey suits, the formal suits that you wear whenever you're trying to appease somebody and work your way up the ladder, normally the one that is the most relaxed fit, the one who's wearing the whole, you know I'm talking about, the Hawaiian shirts, the guy who might have his sleeves rolled up at the office, and you might be able to actually see his tattoos, this guy could probably do 20 of everybody else in that building. He could do all 20 of their jobs by himself. And he has the tenure to back it up. That's Mike Beltran for Bellator. So anybody that wants to be watching for a specific referee, I sincerely hope that the main events that happen coming up soon, I'm hoping Mike Beltran gets one of them. Whether they decide that it's for Chael versus Lyoto Machida or several other fights down the road, I hope that he gets a main event soon. You can see this guy work his magic. And now when it comes to working his magic, I'm sorry, but this is a trick gone wrong. When I look at Henry Cejudo going and having his stare down with Moraes before they have their fight, what do we see? We don't see a power struggle. We see a guy wearing a Burger King outfit, pulling rabbits and snakes out of a hat. And one of the funniest parts to me wasn't even necessarily Henry Cejudo's failed attempt at humor and magic tricks. The funniest part for me was Dana White's response. You know, he totally butchers this, because King Mo had already done that before, walking up with a crown on his head. Now Henry Cejudo shows up with a crown. It's confusing. And a cape. And a wand with a magic hat that he continues to slap. And he slaps it with vigilance and rage. Like, I'll see you in the cage. And he keeps pulling out random objects. He takes out the snake like he's done before with TJ Dillashaw and slams the snake on the ground. And as he throws it out, Dana White's response is the best part. Him looking into the audience and saying, "Sorry, ma'am." That was the best part of the entire press conference, and the stare down was for him to try to be cordial with this poor lady in the front row that had to catch this snake in the grass that just flew out of Cejudo's hat. And he's so serious about it. I'm like, so this is definitely what I've heard before, the Henry Cejudo complex, where you can't get out of your own dadgum way. This isn't a power struggle. This is embarrassment to trash talk, where that age is obviously dying off faster. This might have been the final bullet that killed the age of trash talk. I mean, when the chamber is empty and the guns are silent, it looks like Senior Henry Cejudo might have been the one who finished it off. So guys, I share all that with you. And the last thing, as always, I'm asking you to consider supporting the show. One way you can do that, you can reach out to me through my social media outlets, through Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. If you want to get yourself a t-shirt, just let us know what sizes you have. They're $15 a piece, and the little redhead girl will be glad to make you a t-shirt once we get the orders in. Got a couple of y'all I need to make sure that I take care of already. Got a free giveaway. Also, if you want to consider giving a cup of coffee, also known as a cup of Ko-fi, there's a Ko-fi account link down here inside of the blog page that you can find. Go to patreon.com/yourfavoriteblockhead, where you can support the show. And also, if you want to support me, if you don't find any of those appealing, you know you can always find something interesting from my friends over at Five Finger Tees, because Five Finger Tees offers a massive selection of movie, TV, pop culture inspired, and ridiculously funny t-shirts that won't break the bank. I talked about horror films earlier, talking about the Blair Witch Project. You can find your horror style t-shirts through Five Finger Tees, and they give you the great deal without having to sacrifice on any quality. So when you get and pick out your t-shirt, when you get to checkout, make sure you use the promo code 5OFF, so you can get 5% off of your purchase at checkout. One word, all lowercase, FIVEOFF, 5OFF at checkout. And as always, guys, I thank you so much for stopping by. This has been your favorite blockhead, and we will see you guys the next time around, next same blockhead time, same blockhead channel.